So what my principle on this was, I want the Lord's people who are being led to bring souls to Christ, to encourage people as pastors, wherever they were, wherever their mission field took them.
Choosing the ministries that we knew the most about, yeah, and that we felt were reaching most people in the best way. There's just such joy in, yes, giving, at least for me. I love writing those checks because I just know it's really helping the God's work. And so that just has never been, I think some people, maybe it's painful to give. Never, ever for us, it's always been joy.
Welcome to the Imperfectly Empowered Podcast with DIY healthy lifestyle blogger, Anna Fulmer. Empowering you to transform your life, one imperfect day at a time.
Welcome to the Imperfectly Empowered Podcast. These are my grandparents, for those of you watching and listening, Paul and Sylvia Hollinger. We grew up calling them Oma and Opa, so I want to clarify that at the beginning for those of you confused. When we were young, my parents wanted to delineate our two sets of grandparents. So one set was grandma and grandpa. And then these are my mom's parents. And did you guys choose Oma and Opa? It's German, yes, by the way, for grandma, yes, and grandpa. Was that your?
We did. Got used and we liked it so much and we thought it would be easy for you children to pick up.
I believe it's Pennsylvania Dutch and not so much German.
Oh,
okay.
Not sure.
In usage.
Yeah.
We went into a lot of both of us and Omas. I see license plates for it. I tried to get Oma and Opa license plate, and they said they, you know, a whole bunch of people already have it, and it's full, oh, for Pennsylvania.
That is so hilarious.
It's not well, uncommon. Then it's
probably Pennsylvania Dutch, right. But anyway, for anyone listening who's wondering, wait, Oma and Opa, it means grandma and grandpa, and that is what I grew up calling this set of grandparents. So Oma and Opa, welcome to the podcast. I am so excited to do this interview. And to set the stage, I just want to share with the listeners that of the people in my life, there's a lot of people that I feel represent different areas of influence. And certainly my grandparents have influenced me, both sets, in many, many ways. But when I think about stewardship from a financial standpoint, as I've gotten into this entrepreneur world, without a doubt, the primary influence in my life where I think if I could emulate what they have done, and Zach and I both say this, it would be my grandparents, Oma and Opa, sitting before us here. And as I've gotten older and entered this business world, I've realized how similar I am, Opa, to you by nature in certain, yes, ways, just the way that we think. And that has been really fun for me to explore as I've left the world of medicine and entered this entrepreneur business. So we're kindred spirits, and I'm really excited to just share how you've influenced me and share your wisdom and story, which is an incredible one. One of the reasons that I'm having you both on here and for Opa to really share the adventures that you've been on. But you started very humbly, mm-hmm, with relatively poor prospects. When you think about the incredible financial legacy that you have built and left, you started really the opposite side of that, and talk to us a little bit about how you were raised and your environment growing up.
Well, it was a little 40-acre farm. Its greatest asset was up the hill to the north. There was a spring underground, and he had a guy come and dig a trench so that that high spring would drop down and feed the horse's watering trough. And it would also come down and provide another spring right under our stone farmhouse for the summertime and our log house for wintertime. And we had a pitcher pump. So we didn't have indoor plumbing. Oh, well, yes, we did, because my daddy moved the outhouse into the shed, the woodshed, when he enlarged the woodshed. So in a sense, that was an in-house.
So he was sort of innovative.
Winter days and hot days. So that was a little progressiveness in my daddy. But we didn't have indoor plumbing until I went to Moody Bible Institute. And I just thanked the Lord that on my first Christmas back from Moody Bible Institute, my daddy actually got indoor plumbing. Woohoo! Have to go to the upstairs. I forgot the name of it that we dumped in. Mm. So that was the environment. And I don't have my daddy's temperament.
Yeah. It's crazy to me that it's such an interesting progression of timeline to think that you didn't have indoor plumbing until you went to college. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, that's right.
That's
a
crazy when you think about that. Did you have a, when did you get electricity? Your parents' home?
I was 8 years old, I'm told, when we first got electricity. So I don't have any recall that that changed anything, but it did. But my dad only had it wired for light bulbs.
Right.
He didn't get anything like pumps to get plumbing.
That is crazy. No indoor plumbing until college.
No refrigeration. I can't even fathom.
College is like crazy overwhelming enough to then be introduced to something as novel as indoor plumbing at the same time.
But his logic on no refrigerator, even a used one, is that we've always had this. The spring that's between the two houses flowed out through the basement of the log house. And they just set crocks in there on big rocks, and the water flowed through them. That was his refrigeration system. And it worked. I mean, it raised generations like that. Yeah. And he couldn't see beyond that. He wasn't contrary. He just wasn't driven.
Yeah, and couldn't see either. Visionary. There was not like the vision for what could be. This is what is, and this is what, And it speaks to your point earlier. It truly is very true that some people are just inherently more visionary than others. So let's talk a little bit about college. So you start college and you're experiencing indoor plumbing for the first time. I have told you this before, and you are so unique for your generation. And for those of you listening as well, to understand where we're coming from, Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania Dutch. This is Amish country, to help you get a sense of where we're at. And even for my parents' generation, but especially for your generation, traveling was a very novel concept. I mean, traveling was like, you know, going to the far end of the state, maybe to the shore.
Right.
And I grew up with a very cross-cultural understanding of traveling to other countries was no big deal. I saw that in my parents. And I really think that stemmed from my mom, especially growing up in a home where she saw you traveling all around the world, which I would argue was very unique, especially for your generation. And when I asked you about that, we figured out, by the way, that my grandparents have hit 5 of the 7 continents in their life. Couple dozen countries, but you said that that love for travel first started in college. And so talk to me a little bit about your experiencing indoor plumbing for the first time, and now you're traveling for the first time. A lot happened.
We were both in the Moody Corral, but they could only take on the ship. We had to go by the Queen Elizabeth before the QE2, where I organized a lot of tours just for the fun of it. Was no particular purpose in mind. But the Moody Corral got on the Queen Elizabeth in New York and ended up in England and got on a bus with a bus driver. And we drove all over Northern Europe, Switzerland, Sweden, Norway, you name it, the tunnels in the mountains. That was all brand new to me. And we were assigned to another student. My student, who was assigned, is like our son Tim, burly, big guy. And we had to share almost single beds at night from the listeners. It was a terrible arrangement for all of that. But I remember one of the first stops in the German country, and the wife and the husband, they had breakfast prepared for me. And you pray in German what I pray in English. And I said, I'd be glad to. So I leave front, and I'm smelling beer. They were having beer for breakfast, and I never had beer for anything.
Welcome to Germany.
German beer.
This is 1958, just to put it in perspective.
The year we got married, 10 days after I got back from that tour of all of Europe, right on through the Mediterranean Sea on the Queen Elizabeth again up in England. That was such a few. I loved it so much, I decided when I'm married and have children, we got to do that. That was so much fun.
And travel. Yeah, but Oma, when was the first that you, had you been overseas before you got married, or was your first overseas trip after you were married?
It was when we traveled. Yeah. I had certainly never been out of the country. No.
Yeah.
I think maybe my first tour on the QE2 later. That was the world's biggest ship at that time.
Yeah.
It was outdone some years later. But that was just the Caribbean. Or is it Caribbean?
Yeah. Tomatoes, tomatoes. You can decide. Oma, this is something that I have always respected about you, and this is a perfect opportunity to highlight this. You also grew up Pennsylvania Dutch country, very similar in a sense, similar environment and culture, not on a farm, but certainly traveling would have been a fairly novel concept. And I respect how you have always been game for the adventure. Opa's the innovator. He's the one that comes up with the visions, but I have always respected the way that you truly have taken your marriage has been very much a team effort.
Yes.
As opposed to being, well, that's just something he does. Mm-hmm. And traveling is a perfect example. I think many women would have been very scared to get outside of their comfort zone in that way. And you could have easily just been like, go ahead. But you partnered with him. So I want to also highlight in all of these adventures, financial included, I have so much respect for the way that you have partnered with him.
Well, thank you. I would never have initiated any of it. My parents didn't travel. I think once or twice in their lives, they went to the shore, and that was a biggie. So they just,
Sandy Cove. My parents
went, Bible conference, Sandy Cove.
My kids milked the cows, so my parents could go to Sandy Cove one summer.
Yeah,
my older sisters milked the cows.
Yeah.
A very almost cloistered life.
Yeah. And she didn't.
Yeah, so you really were, I mean, you were ahead of your time, truly, for your generation in this area, especially. Mm-hmm. That was something I think that was very unique. And it shaped my understanding of the world, I really think, because of that. And my parents being, well, for those of you that don't know, my first 5 years, 4 years of my life, I grew up in Great Britain. I was very early on traveling internationally. There were two pretty significant leaps of faith that you took more from a financial standpoint pretty early on in your marriage. And I actually can't even say which one came first, but it was the radio station, WDAC, and a farm. And farmhouse that was very old and run down. Which of those came first?
The radio station. That was
the radio station. So tell me a little bit. This was crazy. You mentioned this when you wrote the story worth that I was reading. For those of you that haven't heard of that, you definitely want to look that up. That's a cool experience. But I'm reading here, you bought 1/3 share of WDAC, which was and is a local radio station here. When the mortgage rate, when was it?
1981.
But the mortgage rate was 16.5% at that time.
And it was such a bargain. Reagan just came into office and it all began to change and go down. But the highest rate was 21% interest
crazy.
Charges on.
We think it's high now.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know what? I paid that at 16.5%. I was glad. That was, like you said, a real reduction from the 21% interest rate in 1981. But the government allowed me to deduct hundreds of thousands of dollars in taxes for interest. And I remember our bookkeeper, he said, I don't believe you. You ended up with this much income, large amount, and you didn't pay any federal taxes. And there are 21% and 16%. It's because it was for the radio station stock that I was doing it. Yep. And at a later time, for the farm, which we bought, those people, they should be doing things for me, not the secular federal government. So we just found ways to not use the government's side, not become welfare recipients at a multi-million dollar level.
Hey, parents.
Yeah, you.
Are you looking for a podcast your kids will really love?
Well, we made one just for you.
And for us.
As genuine, all-natural kids ourselves, we know what makes a fun and interesting podcast.
So we decided to make it ourselves. Every show is packed with interviews, stories, and on-the-ground reporting.
We have interviewed everyone from scientists to Grammy Award-winning musicians to NFL quarterbacks.
Listen to Wild Interest wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, well, and what's interesting is this is something that I am learning now, and you are already implementing this, you know, several decades ago, but tax law is sort of the name of the game, understanding how to leverage taxes to put more money into your business, which is a whole nother. I actually have someone coming onto the podcast to talk about taxes. It really is sort of the secret to the entrepreneur world and success. But were there conversations like between the two of you in an investment like this? Because this was a massive, and WDAC, the radio station at this time, to my understanding, wasn't exactly a flourishing, there was no FM radio even at this point. Is that correct? I mean, this was like early, you guys imagine this, there was no FM radio at this point in time.
A Jewish guy from New York City made pre-tuned to 94.5 radios, and he sold them at a discount store for just a very few dollars. And the Mennonites, who never were allowed to listen to radio because of their Christian convictions, like the Amish are today. What the Amish are today is pretty much the way I was raised as a child, with the outhouse and all that sort of thing. Mm. And they're the ones who bought our farm. They're the new ones, and we carried that mortgage at, guess what, not 31%, but 3% all these years.
Another two years, we'll get the last payment. Yeah. So pre-tune, this is such a, I love this story, because basically you bought a third share of a radio station.
Right.
At this crazy percentage, there was no FM radio. So now you've got this debt that you're trying to be responsible with, but you also need to then expand the reach of this radio station from a business standpoint. There's no FM radio. And I love the ingenuity here, because you basically looked at the market, and in this area, that would have been very heavily, you found an audience that was being underserved. And so they had pre-tuned radios. I think this is so fascinating. Explain to people basically how you grew WDAC through pre-tuned radios, because people don't even probably know what that is.
In fact, one man who's my age, his dad bought one of those, and he put them in the log in the milk house. They were farmers too. And when he went to sleep, the dad went to sleep on Sundays, he unplugged that and took the back off of it, and he tuned it from WDAC to the rock and roll station over in York at that time. And he listened till he thought his dad was about finished, and then he took the screwdriver and brought it back again. That's one of my favorite stories of innovation.
So the pre-tuned radios were basically all like little portable radios that were pre-tuned to WDAC station 94.5. And did you just go and hand them out?
Oh, no, they bought those.
They bought them.
Bought those. Not the Amish. The Mennonites bought those. And the Brethren and the all United Zion. I grew up in United Zion Children's Denomination. Yeah. They were buying them too because they were taught that radio was evil and rock and roll was the big deal just 10 years before that.
Yeah.
And all those kids were secretly listening to rock and roll.
But it was okay if it was a Christian radio station. Is that the...
Yeah, that was the whole point.
That was the first thing that meant radio okay.
And I decided I'm going to jump in on that. And so down at Baltimore, they hired me to come down and set them up with this new FM station. I was helping people around the country. Yeah.
And it grew exponentially during your years of management. A part of that role as owner and manager, you did a lot of interviewing.
Oh,
on the radio and
governors, missionaries. I love that. Well, what you're doing now is one of my favorite things.
You have tried it all. Worried you will never lose the extra weight or reclaim the energy you once enjoyed? Want to achieve fat loss without spending hours in a gym or eliminating entire food groups from your diet? Well, now you can. In the virtual Faster Way to Fat Loss with Anna, my 6-week fitness and nutrition program, you will learn how to pair effective 30-minute workouts with all-natural, evidence-based nutritional strategies to leverage what you eat and when you eat to reset your metabolism and burn fat fast, even that stubborn belly fat. I am a dual-certified nurse practitioner passionate about teaching sustainable strategies to promote fat loss and prevent disease. I have cheered on thousands of clients who have done just that with the Faster Way program. In my 6-week program, the average client currently sheds 7 inches of body fat. 93% report more energy, and 89% state that their mental health has improved. 100% of clients report they feel this program is sustainable. Curious to try the program, but not sure if the strategies will work for you? Try the Faster Way strategies for free. Head to www.hammersandhugs.com and sign up for my free 7-day fat loss accelerator course today and start your own transformation story.
Yeah, well, so I have to share this. When I first started preparing to be a podcast host, I asked Opa, I said, in all of your years of interviewing, what would be your best advice for somebody who wants to start interviewing? And I'll never forget what you said, and I've used it a lot, and I now teach other people the same strategy. You said, who, what, where, and when get the conversation started, but why and how keeps the conversation going. And I would also argue why and how are ultimately what people want to know.
So
if any of you are wanting to know how to ask better questions in life, who, what, when, and where starts the conversation, but how and why keeps it going. So the art of asking better questions.
You have the order perfect on that, because those things are more trivial in the beginning. But the how is probably a secret in many cases. They're not going to tell me on that.
Right.
And you're doing a great job of being other person oriented. If this interview hasn't been very much about you, and I try not to have my interviews with these significant people make it about me, and your interviewee, they pick up on that very quickly. They want to know, is this guy just milking my brains for his benefit?
Right. Yeah, you've always done a very good job at asking questions because you want to help learn about the person as opposed to for just your own benefit. So we talked a little bit, you had this massive investment in this radio station when rates were through the roof. It's hard to fathom. That was a massive leap of faith. It grew exponentially. And there was another pretty significant ahead of your time type of investment. And it was a 100-acre farm, right? Was it 100 acres? Am I remembering that right? Yeah, it was in southern Lancaster County.
Mm-hmm.
And this is assuredly where my love for sort of that old world charm began. I have said this before on my blog. In fact, I did an entire post on their farmhouse renovation because, again, the whole white farmhouse phenomenon that's happened now, you two were decades ahead of that when you bought and renovated your old farmhouse. But Oma, do you remember that conversation when, so you've had this investment in WDAC and now he wants to invest in this 100-acre farm with this dilapidated old farmhouse?
I think I was kind of excited about the idea about fixing that place up, but I will always remember when we showed it to Paul's mother and walking out after we had taken and she said, "Why would you want to buy a dump like this?" Because she saw that the old farmhouse in its unkempt state. And we were already picturing how I would, you know, decorate those rooms and what we would do. But she couldn't see that. And she just could not imagine why we were buying that place.
But, oh, did she love it when we were finished. And the almost virtually the same amount of $250,000 for all of that renovation. And I added two-car garage and other add-on buildings, a fireplace that was controlled by a thermostat, not thought of in those days, a real fireplace.
Innovative.
Yeah. I should add that when you saw that home then, that beautiful stone home was covered with white plaster, which is kind of, you know, chipping off and so on. So it wasn't pretty to the eye at all. Mm-hmm. And she only saw that.
Yeah. Oma and a lot of our family members, my sisters and their husbands, they came with hammers and chisels and we chiseled all that stuff off. And then I hired a sandblaster to clean all of that plaster in the grooves and make it deep enough that the new mounting that was raised just about a 16th of an inch, but it was a raised and it's still there. It's still beautiful.
I have, again, for anyone interested in seeing these pictures, I did do a post. We'll make sure it's linked in the show notes. I mean, that farm was like, without a doubt, one of my favorite places on earth. There was so many memories made with that farmhouse and then also the property. You had a whole bunch of wooded acreage and your
trails.
Innovation. What's that?
The trails.
One of my favorite projects that you did, again, the innovation that we see here was the toboggan slope. So of you listening, the farm was sort of set into a hillside.
It was.
And the wooded acreage also followed the slope of this hill. There was also a lot of farming acreage as well as part of it. But the woods, Opa created this massive. So in a lot of places in the country, toboggans are hats. So to be clear, I'm not talking about hats here. Toboggan in this part of the country means a really, really long sled. So we called it a toboggan slope, but it was ultimately a sledding hill. How many feet do you think that was? From the very, very top to bottom.
To the creek.
If
you did turn at the
If it was icy enough, you could get the whole way to the creek. It was a long run. 1,500 feet. I believe it.
But it was bulldozed. We cut down 90 trees and made them into firewood. And it was bulldozed. And I'll never forget when your brother Andy was in a plastic one. And about halfway down the steep, really fast, he might have been doing 30 miles an hour, when he laid a little bit too much on the left side, and it shot him up the side of that slope and set his feet higher than his head. And he went between two tall trees, and he didn't get any further than 5 or 6 inches for each one. Oh, I held my breath and I said, "Oh, Jesus, protect him." He landed in snow and briars.
I remember that.
Into the barn, I got my chainsaw and those two trees were cut down.
They were gone.
Never going to watch that again.
I mean, it's nothing short of a miracle. We did not have broken limbs. I mean, I can't think of a single significant injury on those slopes, but you also did a good job. You piled up the banks on either side of the slope. So they were also pretty high.
Yeah, they were.
You had to, I mean, it would have taken some work to really, I mean, my brother, of course, was capable of it. And he was capable of anything. But
yes,
for most of us, it would have taken a lot of work to really shoot over the banks. But what I loved is, so then you took, so you created this, the sledding, massive sledding hill through the woods. But then what was great is when we'd have friends come, you would get your tractor and you built a box on the back of the tractor so we could put our sleds in the front loader. Mm-hmm. And then we sat in this box on the back.
Yes. Right.
Yeah. And well, then you and took us up the
weight,
hill.
It gave weight to the back wheels to get you back up the hill again. It had a practical purpose also.
That's true.
But I wish you had brought to this interview what I think I just sent back to you when you were mowing trails for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a hot day. It was in the summertime. And you took your outer shirt off and you hung it over the back of the seat. But with all of this vibration, it went down through and under the mower. And then you held it up. It was in shreds. It didn't cover much of you. I should have asked you to bring that along because that was an innovation there.
Yeah, that was something. I was driving tractors before I was driving cars. Yeah, I forget. We had to be, was it 10 or 12? What was your rule? I can't remember.
I don't know that we had a rule.
I think there was an age. Drive
it, I allowed it. It depended on the personality and the ambition of the grandchild.
So Andy had to be 26. Just
kidding. Especially after that trip.
But yeah, I was driving tractors before I was driving cars and did a lot of mowing. But I have clear memories. I think you, especially because of the farm, you were the first to really introduce the concept at a pretty young age for us. You would have projects for us to do. So when we would come to the farm, mm-hmm. You never forced it on us. There was just an option of, we slept over at the farm all of the time, but you would often have a list and you'd say, here are the projects that I need to get done today. Would you like to do any of them? And then you had the value that you perceived the time would be worth for us. And then you would pay us for completion of these projects. And I mean, I have a very clear memory of that. And again, like we have pointed out, certain personalities latch onto that quicker than others.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, absolutely. I'll do these projects for money. But it was the first memory that I really have of this concept of work and reward. Mm-hmm. And you were very diligent about making sure that we understood that, you know, with hard work comes reward. It doesn't always result in financial reward, but you wanted to help us create that correlation. And I think that was a valuable way of doing
that. Thank you. You each had your own tablet.
Mm-hmm.
And in that tablet, it was a time card. And it was the date there. And when you came and started, whether you did any good or not, didn't matter. Yep. You were there. From that to the time you ended, and then I did the math of the hours times the, I think it was $15 an hour back at that mm-hmm. time. It was quite a lot. I remember your mom, Carrie.
For a kid, yeah.
Yeah. Said, you're overpaying them. They can't get that out of factory.
Yeah, I mean, it was really a great way of
rewarding.
Just creating that correlation, even if there's not always financial reward for the work, this concept that investing time in labor, regardless of what it is, will reap benefit in one way or another. So yeah, I have very clear memories of that. And the farm was just such an excellent example of that vision. And it's so funny, Oma, you mentioned what Opa's mother said, and both of you, this was true of both of you, but I'll never forget when we bought our first fixer upper, that Victorian. Zach and I had just come back from Baltimore, and I always say we were energy rich but cash poor, and so we decided to invest in a fixer upper. And the majority of people that walked through that home were basically like, what, why would you buy this as your first home? And I distinctly remember the two of you walking through and being excited for us. And certainly it was reminiscent of your own investment in the farmhouse. Right. But again, kindred spirits, Opa, every single home that we bought then, every project, you were without a doubt the only person as excited about seeing the before as you were the after. And I have clear memories every single home when we were going to do the basement renovation. You wanted to see the before and you were as interested in hearing the vision for what I was going to do as you were seeing the after. And, you know, that again speaks to and you have always been so intentional about your financial wealth and stating that it's simply yours to steward, given by God, but ultimately it belongs to Him. My listeners have also heard me say many times that money is a vehicle, not a destination. Yes. It's a tool. It's a gift, just like somebody may be gifted at singing. How are you stewarding that gift? Somebody might be gifted at hosting. And how are you stewarding that gift? Specifically talking about stewardship of finances, share with us some of your top principles for financial stewardship.
People who are being led to bring souls to Christ, to encourage people as pastors wherever they were, wherever their mission field took them.
Choosing the ministries that we knew the most about and that we felt were reaching most people in the best way.
Be intentional about where your hard-earned money is going to go to. And I think that's a good principle regardless, is it would be preferable for it to not go back to the government, regardless of where you stand on any government issues. Like, wouldn't you rather that money, if you're passionate about rescuing animals or you're passionate about the environment, then make sure you're being intentional about where that money is going to go on your death. Don't be afraid to think through that, take those extra steps. And again, that idea of intention and living with intention and stewarding your gifts wisely, including financial.
There's just such joy in giving, at least for me. I just, I love writing those checks because I just know it's really helping the God's work. And so that just has never been, I think some people, maybe it's painful to give, never, ever for us, it's always been joy.
There is joy in generosity. And I think it's such an interesting thing that we kind of have backwards, and I've had to grow in this area myself, but this idea that it's like the harder you hold on to your money, there's actually a lack of abundance then that stems from that. And it's literally why the business that I'm creating is being founded on this concept of invest in yourself to impact others, meaning invest in yourself, and I'm going to actually give you back money with the express intent that you are going to give it forward to a mom who is adopting. And you have always been very, very good at this. And I think something, speaking of adoption and generosity, that I want to point out here that I appreciate about you both is when you don't understand something, as opposed to making assumptions, you have always asked questions. So like with adoption, that was relatively unfamiliar to you both, especially international adoption. And so you approached us and you had really, really great questions before you gave. You wanted to make sure you understood, you know, how are these children coming about, you know, and what is the process in this country for children who are orphaned, et cetera. But then once you had an understanding of what it involved and you felt a sense of clarity, you literally got out your checkbook and wrote us a significantly generous gift on the spot. And the reason that I bring that up is I think there's this lesson to be learned that not only is there joy in giving, but this idea of being willing to ask the questions to gain understanding as well. You guys have been a really, really good example of that, but then being very intentional about acting on that understanding and then she's generously the giving.
I depended on her to do the action. I decided
to actually write
her,
to follow
consult
through,
her.
Yeah. Greater joy in writing that check than if somebody had given us something. I mean, it's just the joy of giving is, you can't explain it if somebody hasn't experienced it.
Yeah.
And your listeners don't all know Jesus, maybe, but the Jesus that we know, you and I and Oma, he said it is better to give than to receive. And in all of our lives,
we understand
we've proven that true. It's more fun to give. And some, even like you, sometime are resident, not sure they, why do you do this? And the answer is, well, my Jesus says it is better. Let me be better. I just want to be better.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah. Let me be better. Amen. And I think the concept too that I want to make clear for anybody listening who, you know, I don't want you to feel discouraged. Well, I don't have a lot of money to give.
Oh, yes.
And I also want to, again, bring this full circle that this concept of stewardship and legacy does not just have to be financial. Mm-hmm. And your gift, what you might have been given to steward, could be something very different. It might be time. Maybe you have an abundance of time. Mm-hmm. How are you stewarding that? What is a way that you can use that to give? Mm-hmm. And maybe it's music. Maybe it's playing the piano. Maybe it is you're just excellent at conversation, and you could use that to go into nursing homes and simply sit with people. Zach's grandfather does this, and I have so much respect for that. He loves to talk. And there are people that are so grateful for him because they have nobody to talk to. And so he goes into nursing homes and he talks to people who have nobody that come and visit them. And so the point is, what is something that you have been gifted with that you have an abundance of, and how can you steward it to give? As Opa said, it is better to give than to receive. So I am very, very grateful for both of you. You have certainly left a legacy that goes beyond just financial, but I'm so grateful for you both.
Thank you.
Have so much love for you. And it's been a blessing that my children have been able to build these memorable relationships with their great grandparents, so many of them. And we're so grateful for your intentionality in building those relationships.
Thank you for blessing us with them.
Yes.
They are such
a problem.
And thank you for being you. During some of this interview, I feel like I'm looking in a mirror.
Aww. I can understand the feeling. Yeah. It is mutual. Yeah. And I have so much respect and love for you both. Thank you for coming to the podcast.
You're welcome. Goodbye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Imperfectly Empowered Podcast. I would love to hear your thoughts from today. Head to your preferred podcasting platform and give the show an honest review and let me know what you think. Remember, you cannot be redefined, only redeveloped one imperfect day at a time. Your story matters, and you are loved.